inner qualities and outer aspects. The answer to the intellect must be in this manner. I believe in this, that the Creator listens to all my requests, my prayers for help. If a person is able to stand firm on his answers to the intellect and heart, then the Creator will reveal himself to him, so that the person will see and sense only the Creator. Within a person are 70 fundamental desires, which are called the 70 nations of the world in the person. Therefore, the spiritual body of a man corresponds to the partsuf of Zeranpin in the world of Azilut, which includes 70 Sephirot. After a person begins to long to draw closer to the Creator, to receive the light of the Kabbalah, he's given feelings and desires that he did not even imagine existed. The 70 desires derive from two sources, because a person progresses forward in combination of the two lines, the right and the left. His actions in accordance with the right line are countered by his evil or egotistic inclination, the husk, or klipa, against the work of the heart, which is called klipa Yishmael. The work in the left line is countered by an evil force against the work of the intellect called the klipa Esav. However, when a person progresses further in his work, he sees that in order to enter into the spiritual realm, he must rid himself of these two klipot, because they do not want to receive the laws of the spiritual realm. Just as it is mentioned in the Bible that the Creator offered the Torah, the laws of the spiritual realm, to Esav and Yishmael before he gave it to Israel, but they didn't want to receive it. Only after a person sees that he's not able to receive the altruistic spiritual laws with either of those forces, the right or the left, then he's careful to progress in his work only to the middle line, which is called, we will do, and then we will hear, which is called, for the sake of bestowal, and is then called, Israel. Since a person, along with all his thoughts, intentions, and desires, is entirely immersed in his egoism, he's unable to think independently, objectively, and non-egotistically. Thus, he's not able to criticize himself. In general, he has no need to criticize himself, since he already knows that everything that a person does is based on his egotistic desires. However, in working on himself, doing work which goes against his desires, when a person invests his effort to develop spiritual yearnings, he needs to examine his situation. The examination is for the person himself and not for the Creator, since the Creator, without this, knows what our situation is. The surest way of testing a person's true spiritual state is to check whether he has joy when he works for the sake of the Creator. If so, we see that the test is not to determine if he exerts great physical and emotional strength, rather an examination of his inner state. Does he remain with the same joy regardless of whether he receives from the Creator what he imagines is necessary for him or not? The Kabbalah speaks of a person as being like a whole world, since inside a person there is to be found everything that is around him, the universe, the nations, Gentiles, the righteous men of the nations of the world, Israel, the temple, and even the Creator himself, the point that's in his heart. In the first place, the Kabbalah teaches of our inner qualities, and then proceeds to the outer aspects that are considered consequences of the inner ones, and thus are designated with respective names. In addition, the spiritual state of the inner qualities directly affects the spiritual state of the outer aspects and the influence of the latter upon us. The initial spiritual state of a person is egoism. If he begins to strive for closeness with the Creator, he is known as a righteous person of the peoples of the world. How can a person verify if he, in fact, is already at this level? Since in man there's only an egoistic desire, then everything that is missing from the gratification of his egoism is perceived to be as taken away from him, as if he possessed that which he desired, and it was then taken from him. This feeling arises from our spiritual past. On the previous spiritual levels, our souls were filled with all good. But with our spiritual descent into this world, we lost all of it. Therefore, the moment that a person feels a desire for something, this is equivalent to the situation where he's filled with complaints towards the Creator about what was taken from him or was not given to him, that for which he longs. Therefore, if a person is able to say in his heart that everything the Creator did is for the good of man, and to be in joy and to feel love towards his Creator, as if he received from him everything he could possibly imagine for himself, and in everything he justifies the supervision of the Creator, Then he successfully completes the test of his intentions, called kavana, and is known as a righteous person of the peoples of the world. If a person works further on the correction of his desire to receive, with the help of the Creator, then the object of verification is no longer the person's thoughts, but his actions. The Creator gives a person everything that he ever desired, but he must return everything, and at the same time, receive only the part that one is capable of receiving for the sake of the Creator. In many situations, the tests are felt like a choice between two possibilities. A person feels that half of his desires draw him to one side, and the other half to the second side. In general, a person does not feel within him any struggle between the opposing forces of good and evil, and this is because only the forces of evil are ruling within him. And the problem that always arises before him is which force is worthwhile to use in order to derive the maximum benefit. In the case where the opposing forces are equal, a person has no possibility to choose or to prefer one over the other, and feels that he's between two forces that are acting upon him. Then the only solution is to turn to the Creator, so that he should draw him to the good side. Thus, a person's obligated to consider everything that happens to him in his life as if it were a trial from above. Then he will speedily rise to the goal of creation. To understand the creation in its generality and the particulars of that which happens to us is possible only if we understand the creation's final goal. Then we will understand the actions of the Creator, since all of them are dependent and emerge from the final goal. Just as in our world, if we do not recognize the future result, we're not capable of understanding any action of a person. It is said, "Don't show something completely in the middle of its work." The Creator represents the entire creation, the light. His goal is to please a person with this light. Thus, the only thing that the Creator must create is the desire to be pleased. All that exists represents the light and the desire to be pleased. All else created beside a person has only one purpose, to aid a person in reaching the final goal of creation. We exist within the Creator, in the ocean of light that fills everything with itself. But we can perceive the Creator only to the degree to which we are comparable to Him in qualities. The light can enter only those of all our desires that are similar to those of the Creator. To the degree that we differ in qualities and desires from the Creator, we do not perceive Him, because His light does not penetrate us. If all our qualities are opposite to His qualities, then we do not perceive Him altogether and imagine ourselves to be the only ones in this world. The Creator strives to give us pleasure through His quality of the desire to give. For this reason, He created all the worlds and their inhabitants with the opposite quality, the desire to receive. All our egotistic qualities are generated by the Creator. Thus, our lowly state is not our own fault, but the Creator wishes for us to correct ourselves and thus become like Him. The light gives life to all substances, inanimate, plant, animal, and human. In our world, the light is obscured, not felt by us. We swim in the ocean of the Creator's light. If part of that light enters us, it is called the soul. Since the light of the Creator brings life, emits vital energy and pleasure, then the one who does not receive the light but only procures insignificant glow from the substance of physical existence is considered to be spiritually dead and lacking a soul. Only those few in this world known as Kabbalists, the word Kabbalah deriving from the word Likabel, to receive the teaching about the way to acquire the light, only a few gain the ability to acquire the light. Each person starts from the original state characterized by a complete lack of perception of the ocean of light in which he swims, and must attain a complete replenishment of light. Such a state is known as the goal of creation, or the final correction. In addition, this state must be reached during the time of a person's life in this world, during one of his returns to this world. Spiritual gradations. The stages of spiritual filling of a person with the light of the Creator are called spiritual gradations, or worlds. Trials and tribulations force a person to move forward towards the goal of creation. If instead of pleasure, the egoism experiences great suffering, then it becomes ready to forfeit the desire to receive in order to end the suffering, since it's better to receive nothing than to receive torment. Various afflictions pursue us to the point at which we completely forego the urge to receive and begin to want only to give. The only difference between people is the kind of pleasure that each hopes to receive. Animalistic, which are bodily pleasures also found in animals. Human, fame, honor, and power. Cognitive, discoveries, achievements. In every person, the drive towards each of these pleasures combines in a particular proportion characteristic only of that person. The human intellect presents itself merely as a tool for the achievement of the desirable. The desires of the person may change, but the intellect helps to find ways to attain different goals. Under the influence of suffering, the egoism departs from the desire to receive enjoyment and acquires the inclination to give. The period necessary for complete eradication of egoism is called 6,000 years, but it has no relationship to the concept of time in our world. Egoism is known as the body. When a person uses it, he senses that it is spiritually dead. Thus, he kills the body by departing from it in 5 stages, from the easiest of its stages to the most egoistic ones. To those desires which a person has managed to abhor egoism, he receives the light of the Creator. In this manner, he sequentially receives 5 types of light known as nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. The stages of spiritual elevation of a person. 1. The pursuit of the egoistic pleasures of this world. A person may finish his life still remaining in this stage until the next return to this world, unless he begins to study Kabbalah. Then he proceeds to stage 2. 2. The recognition of egoism as harmful and evil towards oneself, and the renunciation of its use. Precisely at the center of a person's egoistic desires is the source or the seed of his spirituality. At a certain moment in a person's life, he begins to feel this desire as a desire and a longing for an understanding and sensing of spirituality. If a person behaves in accordance with these desires, develops and cultivates them rather than suppressing them, then these desires begin to grow. Afterwards, by adding the proper intention, which he acquires with the guidance of his teacher, he begins to sense the spiritual light, which was not felt before, in his new spiritual desires. Its presence helps to attain confidence and strength needed for further correction of egoism. 3. The attainment of the state in which a person acquires a desire only to please the Creator with all of his actions. 4. The correction of the acquired desires to give into desires to receive for the sake of the Creator. For this purpose, the person uses his desires for pleasure, but with an intention for the sake of the Creator. The commencement of this task is called the revival of the dead. It's done by turning already rejected egoistic desires into the opposite. Once the task is completed, a person wins doubly, meaning he enjoys the Creator and his likeness to him. The end of correcting egoism into altruism is known as the end of correction. Every time one corrects a part of his desires, one receives a part of his soul, and this light allows him to continue further, until the person entirely alters himself and completely regains his soul. That light, that part of the Creator, which corresponds to his prototypical egoism as was created by the Creator. Completely transforming all his egoism into altruism, the person wholly eliminates any barriers for receiving the light of the Creator, filling himself with the Creator. That is, he fully merges with the Creator by perceiving the entire ocean of light around and by enjoying it. Our limited potential to understand the world has been repeatedly pointed out. To the degree that we cannot understand ourselves, we also cannot understand the Creator. All our perceptions are the result of subjective sensations. More accurately, the reactions of our body to the external stimuli that the body is able to feel. In other words, we receive and perceive only that amount of information that is selectively sent to us in accordance with the quality and quantity of depth of our potential perception. 4 fundamental outlooks. Lacking concrete information regarding the structure and function of higher, elusive notions that are not felt by us, we permit ourselves to philosophize and argue about their hypothetical configurations and operations. This is reminiscent of children's arguments regarding who's right about some completely unknown subject. Attempts of all religions, secular, scientific, and pseudoscientific philosophies to define the notions of soul and body focus on 4 fundamental outlooks. The religious outlook. All that exists in any object is its soul. Each soul differentiates from the other by its qualities known as the spiritual qualities of a person. Soul exists independently of the body, before the body's birth, before being garbed in the body, and after its death, which is a completely biological process of decomposition of albumin substance into its comprising parts. And the notion of a person who believes does not correspond to the notion of a religious one. Thus, the death of the physical body does not affect the soul itself, but only serves as the cause for the separation of the soul from the body. The soul represents something eternal, since it's not composed of materials of this world. By its nature, the soul is undivided. It does not consist of several comprising parts, and therefore cannot be divided, cannot disintegrate, and ultimately cannot die. The physical biological body is the outer enclothement of the soul. It is the garments into which the soul dresses, and acting through the body displays its qualities, intellectual, spiritual, and its character, like a person driving a car displays his own wishes, characters, and intellect in all the operations of the car. In addition, the soul gives the body life and motion, cares for the protection of the body to such an extent that without the soul, the body lacks life and movement. The body itself alone is dead material, as it appears to us after the soul leaves the body at the moment of death. The moment of death we call the departure of the soul from the body, and therefore all the signs of life are dependent and determined by the soul. Dualistic. As a result of the development of science, a new outlook on the person's body emerged. Our body can also exist without any kind of spiritual portions in it that invigorates it. The body can exist absolutely independently of the soul. This can be proven by the use of biological and medical experiments that are now able to revive the body or its parts. But the body, in a state like this, is no more than an independently existing biological object, the form in which albumin substance exists. The factor that determines various personal qualities is the soul, which descends into the body from above, as in the first approach. The difference between this point of view and the previous one centers on the fact that the first one proposes that just as the soul endows the body with life, so too it bestows upon it intellectual and spiritual qualities, whereas the second point of view argues that the soul only bestows spiritual qualities on the body, since it is evident from experiments that the body can exist by itself without the help of any additional upper powers. And thus there only remains for the soul the function of being the source of all the good qualities that are characteristic of the spiritual, but not the material. Moreover, this approach maintains that regardless of the fact that the body can exist independently, it nevertheless is the product of the soul. The soul is seen as primary, since it's the cause of the birth and the maintenance of the body. Non-believer. A non-believer is one who denies the existence of spiritual structures, as well as the presence of the soul in the body, and only recognizes the existence of the material substance and its properties. And so since there's no soul, the human intellect, along with all other qualities of the human being, also result from the body that generated them, since the body is a system that controls its characteristics by sending commands via electrical signals by way of nerve conductors. So a non-believer is not the same thing as non-religious. All the sensations of the body occur by the interaction of nerve endings equipped with outer stimulators and pass via the nerve connectors to the brain, where they are then analyzed and classified as either pain or pleasure. The type of reaction dictated by the mind to a particular organ is determined in accordance with the classification that's established. If so, all is constructed as in a mechanism with sensors, whereby signals are transmitted to, processed, and emitted by the brain device, and also controlled by means of reverse feedback. The brain device operates according to the principle of distancing itself from pain and coming closer to pleasure. The signals determine the attitude of a person towards life and his consequent actions. Reason, as perceived by us, is seen as a reflection of the process that takes place in our body, a photograph, so to say. The main difference between a human being and an animal is the fact that in a human brain, there is development to such an extent that all the processes taking place in the organism are condensed into such an exhaustive picture that they're perceived by us as reason and logic. But our entire intellect is the result of our corporal perception and cognizance. Undoubtedly, of all the approaches to understand the problem, this one is the most logical, scientific, and understandable, since it relies solely on experience and hence concerns itself only with the body of a person, as opposed to some ephemeral notion known as the soul. Thus, this approach is the most reliable in this, that it deals with the person's body. The flaw in this approach is in the fact that it is unsatisfactory and repellent even to the non-believers because it presents a person as a robot in the hands of blind nature. Predetermined qualities of character, laws of social evolution, demands of our bodies in sustenance of life and search for pleasure. All of these deprive us of the status of reasoning beings. Since if a human being is merely a mechanism forced to act in accordance with the data which was initially prepared in it and the accepted norms of society, then this point of view negates the whole idea of free will and the right to choose one's actions, i.e. the idea of objective thinking. Though a human being is created by nature, he considers himself to be wiser than her. Thus, this view cannot be accepted even by those who do not believe in the upper intellect, because in that case, they appear to be completely governed by blind nature that lacks any design or goal, but simply toys with people, without any purpose, giving no reason for their life or for their death. In order to somehow ameliorate such a scientifically certain but spiritually unacceptable approach to the question of our existence, in our time, humanity gradually adopted a modern outlook on itself. The modern. It became fashionable, especially in our time, even though a person completely accepts the previously utterly materialistic approach to the question of creation as the most scientifically reliable and understandable one, to concede that there exists something eternal, underlying, and spiritual in a person that drapes itself in the material bodily casing. Precisely this is the spiritual essence of a person, known as the soul, whereas the body is only the garb. Still, the adherence to this view cannot explain how the soul becomes enclosed in the body, the relation between them, the source of the soul, and the essence of the soul. Thus, closing its eyes on all these questions, humanity resorts to an old-tested method of complacency. It forgets about all its concerns in the torrent of daily petty burdens and delights, living today like yesterday. Who can understand what is the body and what is the soul? What the relation between them is? Why we perceive ourselves as being comprised of two parts, the material and the spiritual? In which of these two can we find ourselves or our eternal I? What happens to our I before death and after our death? Whether it remains the same I as we perceive now? Is it the same as the one felt within our body and outside of it before death and after death? Most importantly, all these questions and possible alternatives of transformation and circulation of the souls and of bodies that arise in our material consciousness are analyzed by our bodily intellect. Are they true or are they merely the products of our imagination, produced by our material mind that created pictures of the spiritual world, of the path from that world to ours and the return from our worlds to the spiritual, in accordance with the earthly understanding and for lack of any other information? Our mind can operate only on the basis of the perceptions in our world, imprinted in it, and thus produce in our imagination our fantasies and assumptions. Similarly, we cannot conceive of an extraterrestrial being that's completely unlike us in all aspects and has no elements of our body. But if all that we are able to imagine and the basis of what we build our theories on happens to be nothing more than a game of attempting to grasp something that we have no capacity to grasp, and if we accept the notions that are produced by our mind in accordance with experience of this world as the truth, lacking any better alternative, then we must ask, if within the bounds of perception in this world there exists an answer to the question, what are the soul and body? I've already mentioned in other parts of the book the issue of limitations in our understanding. To the degree that we cannot truly see, perceive, or imagine any object in this world, we also cannot truly judge our soul, or for that matter, our body. Given the four categories of understanding an object, the material of the object, the outer form of the object, the abstracted form of the object, and the essence of the object, we are able to perceive only the outer form of the object as it appears to us and the material of which the object consists, which we are able to determine as a result of our examination. But the removed form of the object, that is, its qualities outside of its material bounds, as well as its essence, are completely incomprehensible to us.